Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business. We talk about things that go on outside the lines of the game of football that affect the game itself. As always, with me is right in the shotgun is Neil Stratton of Inside the League. Neil, how's it going this morning?
Going great. It's good to be here, Justin. Looking forward to another half hour of good football talk.
For sure. And obviously we had kind of our first round talk last week, Friday, the day after, you know, the draft. Now the 2016 draft is completely in the books. A lot of interesting things that kind of played out there, you know, in the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round, and, you know, free agency there. So we wanted to dive in that. We want to look at more on an agent perspective. Obviously, Neil's clients being a majority of them agents in the business, and that's kind of the target audience that we kind of talk to and you know, kind of talk about there. So first we want to start talking about in regards to medical. Medical is a situation where a lot of agents obviously don't have the reports on the players that they're going after that might have had some injuries in the past, and especially as far as high-profile guys. You know, Miles Jack was a guy who a lot of people talked about, maybe top five pick, maybe five to Jacksonville. He obviously slid all the way out of the first round. Same thing with Jalen Smith. A lot of people prior to his injury said, hey, maybe he's a top five player there. He slides all the way out of the first round. Obviously, the first round standpoint gives guys, those are fully guaranteed contracts. So, once you get out of the first round, the money guarantee that goes there. So, Miles Jack goes to Jacksonville the second round, and Jalen Smith goes off the board a lot sooner than a lot of people had thought to the Dallas Cowboys there in the second round. Medical, what type of, advice or different things like that, as far as giving to agents in regards to dealing with signing guys who have medical issues there where we don't necessarily know, and the teams don't necessarily know until they get signed off by the doctors.
That's a tough part of the game, Justin, because with both Jack and Smith, both of them had been recruited heavily for quite a long period of time before they were hurt, and then they got hurt, and in both cases their seasons were both over when they got hurt. And so looking at it from a contract advisor standpoint, you're either in or you're out, and so you have to make a calculated risk on the damage that was done, and do you want to walk away from a relationship, and do you think there's anything that you can salvage? And of course that risk is based on where you think the player will go in the draft. I can't remember when Jack got hurt in September, October, whenever it was. I can't remember anyone saying this is a major injury that's going to have a serious impact on him and may even affect him going forward. I don't think anyone said the M word, microfracture, at all last fall. So I think that if I were Octagon, and there were certainly, I know there were a number of other firms in their CAA as well, I don't know that I turn back just because of an injury. Again, I don't know exactly what information they were privy to, and he did a long period of rehabilitation throughout the fall, and maybe there's more information than we know. But with Jalen Smith, another situation where he got injured in a bowl game, so it's not like he had an injury going into the season that was chronic and continued to dog him. I mean, until he was hurt, there really weren't any issues whatsoever. And then he got and was looking like a top five pick. And then he got hurt and threw everything into a jumble. I think with Jack also, the bigger issue perhaps is something we alluded to last weekend, that Jack essentially admitted just days before the draft that he's probably going to have microfracture surgery. And he essentially said anything over 3 years is a plus. That's not exactly what you want to hear when you're investing a first-round pick in a player. So injuries are a big issue. They're a big problem. They're not going away. And they're just one more thing that kind of makes this a very difficult walk on eggshells kind of proposition, this representing of NFL players.
Correct. And obviously, you know, I'd brought up in the past in regards to Jay Ajayi from Boise State last year's draft, you know, a guy who got injured as a freshman, had an ACL injury. There was concern in regards to, you know, cartilage damage, you know, as far as just bone on bone. And he goes from a guy who's probably a second-round talent to a fifth-round draft pick. And then a guy who I represented last year, Trevor Siemian, has a knee injury there, you know, but it's not as serious, you know, and still ends up being the seventh quarterback, you know, drafted there when a ton of firms walked away because of the knee injury that he had, you know, against Purdue after beating Notre Dame. So you never know. I think that's the biggest thing in regards to whether you're covering the draft as a media guy. I mean, when NFL Network and ESPN's doing their mock drafts and talking about this player and that player, they don't have the medical information. You know, people on Twitter, they don't have the medical information. I think the medical is a big part, a mystery there that, you know, you don't know, and the only thing that people really do know are the doctors and the team physicians who are either taking guys off the board or, you know, keeping, you know, guys on the board there. So I think medical is a factor that, hey, you don't know how that's going to play out, and it's hard to kind of, you know, there's really no, you know, areas to say, okay, hey, this, you can do this or you can do that. You know, it's there's nothing that's self-inflicting. It's like you had said, it's part of the game. Now, Stan,
well,
what that is
– make...
oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Justin. Another point to make is you've got 32 doctors that look at this, and they all make their own decisions on it. So some might, again, have more risk tolerance than others. And you've also got teams where maybe the general manager is in a position where he's more solid, more secure, and he's not going to – if his first-round or second-round pick doesn't ever play again, he's not going to get fired. You had that in Dallas with Jerry Jones. I mean, obviously he's the owner. He's also the general manager, so he doesn't have to worry about that. Anyway, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
No, this was a great point and different things like that. Like I said, Jerry Jones, he doesn't have to worry about getting fired as a GM, so he can take a flyer on Jalen Smith. Something you can control, and I've seen, you know, a video that you had done in regards to, you know, getting guys for his pre-draft and, you know, in regards to interview skills and different things like that. And that's the character issue. Obviously, we talked about this in nauseam last week, but I wanted to kind of bring it up briefly in regards to Laramie Tunsil. What, you know, in regards to advising agent Neil, in regards to guys that have character, you know, red flags or character issues, what do you kind of advise those agents of how to, you know, tread on that character aspect of things?
Well, I told many people this week because, you know, we're coming off the draft and have had lots of discussions about the draft and how it played out because it was such an unusual draft. But I told someone when I launched ITL in 02, one of my goals was I wanted to learn the rules of scouting. Where, how much is too much when it comes to character? How much is too much when it comes to size and speed? You know, where are the markers? Where do you fit? And when are you too short? Or when are you too tall? Or when are you too slow? Or when does the tape not match the player? Whatever. And what I found, Justin, and maybe it's been different for you, is there are no rules. I mean, one team's character red flag that would take a player off the board isn't even an issue for another team. And ultimately, it comes down to how much do you fall in love with this player? And in many cases, how badly do you want to believe his story that he wasn't there or he didn't mean to do it or it was all a big misunderstanding? I see these stories where they talk about, oh, well, he's got character issues and that's what dropped him three rounds or that's what dropped him out of the draft or he had character issues but they didn't affect him because of A, B, or C. I've never really been able to get a firm handle on that, Justin. I think that there are certainly some issues that are worse than others. For example, any kind of sexual misconduct thing that involves a rape or hitting a girl, anything along those lines seems to be a greater mark. But is it a deal breaker? I don't know. you know, there was a player whose name I think his name was Tony Washington 2 or 3 years ago, and he was a very talented offensive tackle who went to Abilene Christian, and great size, great feet. Tackle is a value position in the NFL. He went undrafted, and I don't even know if he was able to get a deal in Canada because, and I don't remember all the details, but I think that there was a sexual misconduct, sexual assault on perhaps his stepsister, something along those lines anyway, that took him off of everyone's board. And so I thought, well, okay, anything like that is obviously a deal breaker. But then you hear about other players who have had somewhat similar issues, but they do wind up getting selected. So I guess it all goes back. I mean, I wish there were, again, certain standards you could point to or say, well, this is where the line is. I don't know that there is. I mean, I think the line is constantly moving. I think there are 32 different lines, and it's like the old, you know, saying, it just takes one team. And that team, I mean, every team is a little different. And even when a guy, you know, and one another thing, the one more point I'll make, when I was talking to Ray, I think when we were getting ready for the Ray Farmer, former Browns GM, Ray Farmer, we were getting ready for his presentation at the Combine in February. He said something along the lines of, well, you know, we took this guy off our board. And what he meant was we took him off consideration for first round, and then, but they would revisit him like in the later rounds in the draft. I think that that's very common. When teams say, well, we took him off our board, that means we move him down our board. So it's just so difficult to pin down and ever changing. And there's so many factors that affect things, like, does the media know about it? How is the media going to react to it? Are we in a big market where it's going to be an issue? How stable and safe is the general manager or the head and or the head coach who are going to make these picks? You know, do they have to win now? Can they afford, do they have a little bit of capital? So it's an ever-changing, very difficult to assess situation with character. It's certainly an issue. But if it's, how big an issue? I mean, it's the old Barry Switzer saying, if a guy has great speed, he has great character. I mean, you know, how badly do you want the player? And how badly do you want the player playing against you if he's kicking your butt? I mean, was character that big of an issue? I don't know. I mean, one would think it would be an issue, but it's also, as a NFL security guy told me, hey, look, we don't have any choir boys playing for us. It's a managed risk situation. And how much, what is your risk tolerance, and how bad can a guy be before you finally say enough?
Yep, and obviously that's the huge thing, and you know, talent sometimes, you know, most of the times overwrites, you know, character, unless it's something that's, you know, you know huge. And again, if you're a talented player, you're going to get a little longer leash, you know, there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's an interesting discussion. You know, that you have a little bit more of a control as a player, you know, in regards to your character on and off the field. Yeah, it's true, there are some times when you're wrong place, you know, wrong time, but at the end of the day, you know, you can affect that more than even on a medical, you know, standpoint there. So, you know, And you know, the other interesting thing in this year's draft was the German wide receiver Moritz Boehringer, a guy who played in the German Football League, did not play in any, you know, Division I, Division II college. They're straight from Europe and was a 6th-round pick by the Minnesota Vikings. You know, I think when you're talking about the 6th and 7th round, you're talking about, you know, the height, weight, speed, or guys that you don't want to have to fight, you know, with other teams in regards to priority for free agency, you know, there, different things like that. So I think when we're looking at those, each team has a different, you know, standpoint there. I think the interesting thing is the, you know, regards to the international aspect of this game and how you're going to grow it. You know, some people said, hey, was this a PR move by the NFL? But Boehringer, you know, is a guy who is a talented athletic guy. How does it translate to the NFL? You know, I think that's it was a huge thing. It was a huge thing for the game. He said, you know, he wanted to be the Dirk Nowitzki of the NFL. Obviously, Dirk Nowitzki is, you know, the German basketball player that plays with the Dallas Mavericks. And, you know, the NBA has gone to hugely international. Every team has multiple guys that's played that are overseas guys, you know, on their, you know, roster there. So this is definitely something interesting to see. Kind of what was your thoughts, you know, with him and kind of going forward? What do you see there, Neil?
Well, one point that you made that I agree with, and I think it's a point that needs to be emphasized, is that teams look at the latter rounds really as almost dispensable, and they don't – I don't think enough teams really pour over those last rounds and try to find – the players that could be difference makers for them that are going to be a lot cheaper and manageable contract wise. So, but because teams tend to be a little bit more, you know, lottery minded when it comes to those later round picks, they can roll the dice on a guy like Amoris Berrien. A couple angles there. Number one, you kind of alluded to the fact that maybe this was a league pick. I wouldn't disagree with this necessarily. I mean, it fits so perfectly. Boringer found out about football by watching Adrian Peterson videos on YouTube, and guess what? Now they're going to be teammates. And obviously, the NFL's made no secret of the fact that they're trying to build markets around the world, and this is a great way to kind of get into Europe in a way that they haven't really been able to crack that market previously in any substantial way. And we know that football's moving overseas. We're seeing two games in London every year now, and I'm not privy to any inside information there, but it certainly seems to have a lot of NFL league kind of fingerprints on that pick. But I think the other point to make is the NFL continues to preach and preach and preach against juniors coming out early. But the fact is, very often when you've got tantalizing athleticism and you haven't played as much football, now that this is a rather extreme case of Boringer because he's really never hardly played any football at all and has almost no tape. But the fact is, if you play less football, you're more exciting and you're more sexy to NFL evaluators. And nobody wants to talk about it, but if you play 4 years, especially at a Division I school, you run the risk of proving that you're not an NFL talent, or at least not possibly project a player that projects as an NFL talent. Whereas, and with juniors that come out early, especially those that maybe were JUCOs that came in and played 1 year at the Division I level and made a big splash, or any kind of player like that, it's the projection aspect of things. Moritz Boringer is a huge projection player. What do you have with him? Nobody really knows. But it goes back to how badly do you want to find out if this guy could be a real decision maker for you. You don't have too many guys at his size and speed on any team if you're looking just as measurables. So he's an exciting guy, and maybe a guy, especially that late in the draft, where you feel like, why not roll the dice on him? But it's just to some degree, and even though I agree with the NFL when they say, hey, look, be careful about coming out after just 3 years. I mean, I'm a guy that believes in education, I guess we all do, but the facts are, very often when you come out early, you, especially with these teams that want to project talent, you are just more exciting. There's that air of mystery that surrounds you, and whether teams want to admit it or not, that's part of the game when it comes to the draft, is, hey, this guy could be something. How badly do you want to find out? Can we really kind of pull a rabbit out of a hat here? So I think that's one of the kind of underlying subplots that people don't want to talk about as much, but are no less relevant when it comes to the NFL draft.
You know, for sure, yeah. And we did see 30, you know, guys that declared early that didn't get drafted. I think, you know, you make, you know, great points there. You know, the fact is the only down down part is you know, the all-star game evaluation aspect, and we talked about that in the past in regards to Eric Fisher, or, you know, there are other aspects of that, you know. And again, every mm-hmm. situation's different, and different things like that. They've tried to change the evaluation process for the juniors, but again, you know, many guys that didn't get drafted, you know, I've heard from people going, hey, well, how did this German kid get drafted and I didn't, or why am I not in the league? And, you know, the German, you know, the Bullring's in, you know, in the league there. Now, there was talk that, you know, the Vikings wanted him, you know, we're going to, you know, instead of trying to fight for him as a priority free agent, they just went ahead and you know, pulled the trigger, you know, on the draft there. So, you know, that's you know, definitely something that, you know, as we go through different shows, we're going to, you know, dive into to things deeper. But one last, you know, topic for today that we wanted to kind of talk to in regards to the scouts and the teams that misrepresent interest pre-draft to players and agents. I think that on a good story of this was the Detroit Lions safety coach at the Senior Bowl told Miles Killebrew that they weren't going to draft him. Said, hey, no, you don't fit our system. You know, we won't draft you. Now, the story kind of, you know, obviously they drafted him there, and the safety coach said, hey, we wanted to see how this player would react when we told him a negative aspect of things, you know, their, you know, standpoint. But we do see a ton of players, you know, scouts that will call players pre-draft saying, oh, hey, you're on our draft board, you're 6th, 7th round, blah, blah, blah. During the draft, you'll have teams that will call and say, hey, we really like your player, you know, but hey, you know, let's wait to the, you know, after the draft and different things like that. I think that's the issue, and that's, again, why agents have a job, is because teams aren't honest with these players, you know, and again, they've got to do a job there and different things like that. But I think it does a disservice to a player when, you know, this is their dream. You're calling this player up and saying, oh, hey, you're on our draft board, you're 6th, 7th round, you know, and then, you know, the guy, they don't draft him, and then they're not even willing to sign him as an undrafted, you know, guy, different things like that. I think that's just, you know, a disservice to the player. I think my thing would be, hey, you know, just let the chips play out and different things like that. At least, you know, there would be some integrity, you know, to those scouts when, you know, the next time they're calling, you know, they're, especially on the agent stuff, because you never really know what's right, what's smoke and different things like that. So you always have to go in with an aspect of the scouts not telling me the whole truth. And I think that's a big, you know, misnomer, especially when we're talking about undrafted free agency. There's only 7 rounds and different things like that, but there's another 20 some guys that sign, you know, as PFAs, and it's a huge game there. And I think that's, we talk about things that are, that, you know, hey, could the NFL kind of clean up or do something different things? I think, to me, that's a big aspect there that, hey, you know, hey, if the NFL can do that. I know you, before we went on air, Ted, said, hey, you had some ex-scouts help some of your agent clients work through the PFA process, the priority free agency, the undrafted, you know, process there. Kind of what was your thoughts there as we kind of roll down here at the end of the show here, Neil?
Well, you know, Jeff, I agree with you. Justin, I agree with you on several things you said, and it is a hard – the whole undrafted free agent process and the calling and weighing out a team's interest, genuine interest versus just their due diligence, is really hard. I think there are 2 or 3 teams, the Jets, the Colts, the Texans come to mind, that they are very expansive when they do their pre-draft sweeps, and they call virtually every kid who's ever put on a helmet who's draft eligible, and they've verify contact information. And I think that's smart, and I think that's thorough. But at the same time, it's often misinterpreted. Now, what do they say when they call? I don't know. I've never been on those calls. Did they lead the players to believe that they'll select them? I don't know. You know, there are so many different indicators and ways that at times agents, and especially parents, and double especially players, take the wrong way. And I salute any parents that are listening and trying to get kind of coached up and educated on this, because there is so little education in the process, and it's so hard to put everything into perspective and bring it into sharper focus. I don't know how you really truly measure teams' interest until you're drafted. And then after the draft, the whole undrafted free agency process is such a weird auction meets poker game kind of exercise that it's really, I don't know, it's something that's really kind of come to fascinate me, because I've had lots and lots of conversations with scouts, and no two teams seem to do it the same way. And there are just different approaches, and some see undrafted free agency as a waste of time, and some see it as a valuable part of their evaluation process and a real time where they can gain an advantage. So, and that's why we, this year was the first year we paired up. I think we had five former scouts that worked with agents that kind of coached them through the undrafted free agency process, and didn't offer any guarantees, of course, but kind of worked with them, tried to match them up with the right teams, tried to develop cohesive strategies, tried to even reach out to some teams in some cases, and maybe try to curry favor with the teams. In some cases it works, in some cases it didn't. It's just so hard to know truly what a team's interest level is, what they're looking for, and a number of other different factors. The one thing that I've kind of gleaned from all these conversations I've had with people about the undrafted free agency process is, when it's over, there are two things really. Number one, if you don't get an offer in the first 90 minutes after the draft, you're pretty much looking at a tryout. You're pretty much in the tryout bin, and that's very different from actually signing a contract as an undrafted free agent. And if you want more on that, check out yesterday's blog post on Succeed in Football. We talk about the difference between a tryout player and an undrafted free agent, as you well know, Justin. The other thing is, it seems like there are a couple positions, especially offensive line, especially offensive tackle, defensive tackle, and maybe quarterback, where you're going to have more value and have a better chance of getting signed. After that, I don't know. I've been studying the undrafted free agency process for a long time. Really getting definite ideas about it and pinning it down is just as hard now as it was. So there's a lot of mystery there, and I guess there's a lot of mystery in the draft, and that's what makes it so interesting and so fascinating to so many people.
Yeah, but, you know, as far as, you know, each roster, it, you know, last year was made up, 29% was made up of undrafted guys. And
right.
what I tell, you know, players and different and parents and different things like that is that in regards to why that is, it's because of the economics of the business. When you're
uh-huh.
talking about a salary cap, and we'll just use, you know, easy numbers of $150 million salary cap, and you got $25 million, you know, in your quarterback, and you got $25, you know, million dollars in a receiver and running back. Well, okay, you know, now we got $50 million in three players. Okay, now we got $100 million to divide over, you know, 50 players. You know, so, you know, on that stuff, you know, it's just not, you know, feasible, you know, their standpoint. So when we talk about an undrafted rookie salary of, you know, rookie minimum this year of $450,000, we're able to, you know, help build some of our back end, you know, rosters, you know, there with the undrafted guys there. So it is, you know, when you're talking about, hey, trying to help players navigate this process in regards to going from a college senior to a NFL rookie, I think that's, you know, and when those guys are, you know, second, third tier type prospects, when they're not going to be the first, second, third round type guys, you never know how it's going to play out. And you want to be able to place your client with the best possible place to whatever. And it's hard not to just take the first offer when a team calls, because you don't know what the second, you don't know if there's going to be a second offer. So
right.
I think it's definitely something, you know, interesting. Unfortunately, we're running up against the clock here, Neil. We got about a minute, you know, left, you know, but I think it's something that, hey, you know, if we, you know, we should probably dive into this topic, you know, more. And like I said, you know, I know you've done a lot of research, you know, on that in regards to, you know, the undrafted free agent. But I think that's where, you know, so many of these players kind of end up into that standpoint, and they don't know the whole process. And like you said, if you haven't got a call, to me, it's not even 90 minutes. It's probably 45 minutes, you know, that you're probably going to be a tryout, you know, guy there. So it's definitely something that's interesting. And, And obviously now we're on the clock for the 2017 NFL draft that, hey, you know, it never stops. And obviously the recruiting process, you know, is just going to continue to go on there. And so it'll be interesting. So Neil, another great half an hour of NFL draft talk. And we covered a lot of topics and you know, now it's kind of off to the off season, but it's never the off season for Inside the League, and people need to go ahead and check that out. And we'll be on next Friday with some other topics in regards to different things like that. So Neil, another great show, and look forward to talking with you next week.
Can't wait! Thanks, Justin.
Talk to you soon.